It's Dr. Cassie Smith, and welcome to Back to the Basics, a simple approach to health in the modern world. I appreciate you taking the time to join me today and hopefully learn ways that could help you improve your health. The modern world has left little time to focus on health and wellness. I hope to give you some quick and simple ways to be well and live your best life. Hello, thank you for joining me on this next episode of Back to the Basics. I have a super special guest today. I'm super excited for you guys to meet Dr. Phyllis Pobey. She is a distinguished expert in weight loss and cosmetic medicine and the visionary CEO of Gene Lean 360. She's triple board certified in weight loss medicine, family medicine, and cosmetic medicine. She leverages the power of nutrigenomics to offer personalized weight loss solutions through her Gene Lean 360. Her approach is rooted in her own transformation. She lost 100 pounds, and she's designated to empowering women over 30 to achieve their health and wellness goals. For more information or how to join her community, you can find her on Instagram or check out her website. We're going to link all of it in the bottom of the podcast show notes, but I'm super excited to have her. So thank you for coming on and talking with me.
Of course. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having me. So I'm excited about just connecting with you as an endocrinologist, obviously working hand in hand with different hormone imbalances and helping people just get to their optimal goal weight is something that we both kind of see a lot. So it's interesting for us to just get together and talk about some of the overlap and some of the things that we've been seeing kind of trending, right?
Yeah, for sure. So I was super excited to have you on my show because I like people who can relate to the patients that we talk to, right? And so I think you have a good story. So I like to kind of start to with kind of tell everyone, I guess, your journey or how you ended up here. Like, what is your why? Because obviously you have a lot of credentials. So triple board certified, right? Super smart. Love that. Well, smart woman. Smart, pretty woman.
You're so sweet. Coming from one gorgeous, brilliant woman. But for me, it really started what I've been overweight my whole life. So I've always kind of been on a diet. I know every single diet. And I think a lot of overweight people are specialists in diets, right? And nothing was really working for me. And I realized I was kind of at a juncture when, as a family medicine physician, I would be advising other people about the perils of being overweight. And I myself was overweight. And that was just, you know, it came to a point where I felt like I couldn't even do my job the way that I needed to because I wasn't healthy the way that I needed to be. And so that just kind of just set me in motion to really find something that could work for me once and for all and sustainably and really just keep the weight off permanently. I just was sick of the yo-yo dieting. I was sick of it. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, right? I had two young kids as well, and I didn't have energy to really play with them. And so I just started researching and finding out what could help me lose this weight. And then I came across personalized medicine because I had been doing that one size fits all approach for so long. And once I realized that I need to do it specific to me, specific to my genetics, is when everything completely changed. So I did that, got tested, actually found out that I didn't need to eat as low carbs as I thought I did. Didn't have any insulin resistance at all. And I love working out. So I actually needed more carbs to fuel my body, build more muscle, and have the energy to, you know, go about my day without crashing. So just changing my approach based on my genetics and what my body needed was key for me. And so I created Gene Lean 360, which really is a genetic testing based company that we work with your genetics to see what you need specific for you. And it's for women over 30, and it's been revolutionary. So that's my journey. Once I found, you know, out this amazing way to look at weight loss, I did get board certified in weight loss medicine, and, you know, the rest is history.
I love that. Yes, I love that. So, you know, they say you're always best equipped to help the person you used to be, right? Mm-hmm. And that, like,
drives a lot of your why. But I do love that the personalized medicine approach. And then, like you said, I just did a podcast last week with somebody where we talked about a lot of women think like you can't have carbs, right? Like you got to starve yourself and you can't have carbs. And so you made a good point. I was very similar in my 30s. Like my younger 30s, I was like, oh, no carbs, you know, no carbs. I'm going to run a ton. And it doesn't always do us all a lot of good. So
no,
I like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Doing myself a lot of harm at the time.
Yeah. And so, like I said, we'll put everything in our show link, notes as far as your Instagram and your website. Cause she has a great Instagram. I love it. It's very informative and aesthetically pleasing. So that is awesome. I love that story. And so you've been able to lose weight and you've been able to keep it off and now help other people. And so that's amazing. Cause I know you're busy, you have kids and you run a busy practice. Yeah. So
super busy.
Yeah. And so what would you say to the person who, you know, the people who say, well, I just don't have time for that. Like I'm so busy. I don't have time to work out. I don't have time to eat right. I don't have time for any of it. What is your, you know, I'm sure you get that. What is your response to that?
I get it. And I would say, because a lot of us women that are in this boat is this idea of perfection. I thought it was just me until I started working with other women, but it's this idea of, if I'm not going to diet perfectly, then I'm not going to do it at all. And so that's why we feel like we don't have the time, because we feel like we need to do these intense 45-minute workouts, meal plan precisely, have everything, you know, perfect macros, or else it's not going to work. And I always say progress over perfection. You do have the time, because it's these little micro shifts that make the biggest changes. And when I got rid of that perfection mentality, that's also when things really switched for me, when I knew that what I was doing was enough, I'm enough. But I do get it and I sympathize, because there's so much conflicting information out there that I find a lot of my clients are not consistent on any one thing, because they keep switching and they think, maybe it's this, maybe I need to carb cycle, maybe I need to fast, maybe I need to. And so they never do any one thing for long enough to see if it's right for them, because there's no confidence to know that is this really the right approach. And that's what I love about genetic testing, is that it gives you that assurance to say, like, I mean, these are my genes, this is my genetics. And it gives you that confidence to know this is the right plan for you. And you can go all the way and you don't need a lot of time. You don't need a lot of time to do things that are in harmony for your body.
Yeah. I love that. That's so true. It's so true. Cause women are always just, you know, shifting around and not trusting, not feeling like they're worthy enough. And so that is powerful stuff. And you said like the micronutrients, or the micro habits, you know, one of my favorite books is Atomic Habits. I'm sure you've read it. Atomic Habits, but it talks about how you just have these little habits and you kind of build upon them. And it's so true. Like over time, if you do the right things, then you will lose weight. And it is also true. I feel like a lot of women that I work with too, it's like, well, if I can't do it perfectly, I don't want to do it at all. And that's just, you know, ridiculous. We're going to mess up. We're going to have bad days, but you start building bad habits when you do the wrong thing multiple days in a row. Right. So if you do the wrong thing, then the next day do the right thing.
Exactly. And some of us don't even know what the wrong thing is. And that's where the, you know, decision paralysis comes from, where I don't even know what to do. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing. And so it's just, I'm just going to eat a bag of chips then.
For me, it would be a jar of peanut butter, but yes, I understand. Yes. Completely understand. So that's awesome. I love that. So yeah, you don't have to be perfect. That's a good, you know, mindset. I like that. Very real. That's what happens in the real world. People will tell you, I'm not going to be perfect. I just don't want to do it. So, okay. Well, I love that. So whenever I told people that you were coming on, I had a bunch of people who reached out and had questions. So I was just going to kind of start asking you some questions. We can kind of talk and see where it ends up. I always have some questions I end with at the end also. So one of the questions I had that we can start with, because this is kind of a huge rabbit hole, how long does it take to lose weight? Like, that's a very generic question, but I feel like a lot of people ask you that, right? Like they come to me and say, I want to lose 40 pounds. How long is it going to take? So what is your response to something like that?
So I deal with women that have 50 pounds or more to lose. So I always am very honest about my journey that to lose 100 pounds, it took me a year. And I was always that person that was like, if I'm not going to lose weight in like a day, I don't even want to do it. Like I always was that immediate gratification person. And it really varies from person to person. And it's slower than you might think. It really is like a pound and a half every week to 2 weeks. To safely lose weight. And it's okay if it's a little bit slower because you want to be able to lose weight and to keep it off. So for a lot of my clients, they want to know how the fastest way that I could just lose weight. And that's really not the best way and the most sustainable way. But sometimes it averages about 8 to 10 pounds a month if you're very diligent. And you could lose 40 pounds in about 4 to 5 months.
So you said you lost 100 pounds in a year?
Yes, it took a whole year for me to lose it. I don't regret it at all. It didn't feel long once I really got into it. But the thought of it needing to take a year, maybe the beginning, is daunting. But one thing, when my clients, it's now what, almost May, my clients that started with me in June are like, I'm so glad I started because the time is going to pass regardless. And it's so insane how quick the month goes by, the months, the year. And, you know, we're already getting into middle of the year. So I would never encourage anyone to look at the time and be like, oh, I don't want to spend a year losing weight. Time's going to go regardless.
I think a year is really fast though. Like, I think that's awesome because I would say it would take 2 years to lose 100 pounds. I'm like you, like, it probably, I mean, a half a pound a week is good. A pound a week is great. So you did it really fast. And the other thing you have to think about too, like what I tell people is you didn't gain that 100 pounds in 3 months. Like, right? I'm sure you didn't just put on 100 pounds in 3 months.
So it's
silly to think like, oh, well, I'm just going to take it off in 3 months. You know, like it doesn't work like that. So
it's wild. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's all perspective. I do notice though, my patients that go the distance are the ones that stop asking how long is it going to take? Because they're locked in, baby. Like they're ready. They're going all the way. They're overdoing fad diets and they know that this is a lifestyle. And so it doesn't even matter how long it's going to take. They know that they are going to be healthy for the rest of their lives. And that's the most important thing to them.
Yeah. And I think that's the best way to lose weight. Like personally, myself, you know, if you're trying to lose weight or be healthy, the best way to do it is to change your lifestyle because then it's not a diet or it's not a fad thing. It's like, this is, you know, it's your identity. And when you're working towards something that's your identity, it's much easier to do, right? Like habits, when you form habits based on your identity, then you're more likely to succeed. And so, I mean, I love that. I think that, yeah, you have to just incorporate it into your life and decide that, you know, this is the type of person I am. Like I did that a long time ago, it's been over 10 years now, but I was having a lot of issues with gluten. And what I realized was, I don't know that I was having a lot of issues with gluten. I was having a lot of issues with processed fried stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But every time I ate it, it made me sick. And so my identity now is that I don't eat gluten. And in that identity, I don't eat, you know, fried things either. And so I just don't, like, if it's an option, it's just, I don't eat that. Like the identity that I have is that is a no, like a hard no, no matter what, you know? So yeah, it's just changing your mindset as to like what I, you know, that identity that you are. So
exactly.
Now I don't even want it. Like before somebody could show me fried chicken and I was like, I want the fried chicken, you know, but now it's like my dad offered me a fried mahi taco, Saturday night. And I was just like, I love mahi, but no, like I don't eat fried. It's easy now, you know, like that's not my identity. So
it just doesn't. Yeah. And you know how it makes you feel, right? So then you feel good at a certain point.
For sure. Yeah. But, you know, to summarize your answer to everyone's different, right? So I also hate that question of like, how long is it going to take to lose 100 pounds? Well, everyone's different. You know, it might take you a year. It might take me 3 years. It might take, yeah. So there's no way to answer that question. It's just, you know, and like you said, hopefully as you start that journey, it's like, it doesn't really matter how long it takes to lose 100 pounds. It's how do you feel? And, you know, what sort of lifestyle are you going to live, right?
Exactly. Like, and you said, who is that person? What I always like to say to people is like, what does that person that you're aiming towards, what does she look like? How does she move in the world? What are her habits like? So that you can really embody that person that you're eventually going to be. And then at that point, that's all that matters. All that matters is becoming that person. It doesn't matter the timeline.
Yeah, it doesn't. So true. Okay. So then another question that somebody said is like, I want a weekly plan, or I want more specifics. I don't want you to tell me just to lift weights and eat less. So, and I don't think that's something you would say. And obviously we can't go into like a full on, you know, what do you do in a week? That's what you do. I mean, if that's what they really want, they can go to your website and get you as a coach. But what are some, you know, things that you could tell someone that, you know, is not just lift weights and eat less? Because what I heard you say is you don't necessarily have to eat less. It's the type of food that you're eating, right?
Exactly. You know, questions like that, I wish I could just give everyone the same like 2-week plan and, you know, have them be golden, but it doesn't work like that. Everyone's so different. Everyone's needs are different. Everyone's coming from a different place. Everyone has different energy requirements. So some people do need a ton more carbs than others. What I would say, though, in terms of losing weight is first look at where you are right now. So it's such an important starting place to say, what are your current habits? Because sometimes people come to me and they're like, I want to lose weight, but they have no idea what they're even eating in the week. They just have no clue. They just are eating healthy. So start from there. Start from where you're eating, and then what can you add? Obviously, you want to add more protein to every meal, more fiber to every meal. I'll probably say this a couple times in this podcast. Protein is king, fiber is queen. You always want to be able to maximize that. And I always recommend not doing things that are fads, like juicing. It'll probably be controversial, but intermittent fasting, it's not for everyone. And we'll probably talk about that more later. And just finding out what works for you. I know that's probably not the answer this person wanted to hear, but that's what I offer is personalized medicine. I can't say anything really without knowing what your habits are and what we need to tweak in order for it to be a permanent lifestyle change that's sustainable for you because it fits nicely into your lifestyle.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, what are you drinking? What are, you know, where are you getting most of your calories from? Are you sleeping? What are your, what do your genes look like? Do you have muscle? Do you not have muscle? What are your hormones? What is your thyroid? So I agree. Like, it's really hard. Nobody fits in a box. And to your point, you know, I'm surprised that social media likes me as much as they do, because I am not a one size fits all type of person. And so I feel like the people on social media that just blow it up are the people that are like, oh, you can only eat this, or you can only, you know, very extreme people, like, right, keto is the only way to go, carnivore is the only way to go, you must intermittent fast for 18 hours a day, like all this crazy baloney. I'm very much a like, what fits best for you. And it may change too, right? So like, what worked for me when I was 35 isn't going to work for me when I'm 40, or it might not even work for me right now. I have weeks and times in my life where I'm really stressed. And when I'm really stressed, what I do in those times are not the same as what I do when I'm on vacation. So everything is different, right? So that's one of the things that I like about you too, is, and I'm hoping that's where healthcare goes, is like, it's not as easy as like, hey, here's your 2-week plan, get back to me in 2 weeks. Cause if it was, you'd be killing it, right? And your job would be really easy. It's not that easy.
Here's a PDF.
It's not. If you have a coach that just sends you a PDF and they send you the same PDF that they sent everyone else, you need to find a different coach. Especially if you're not doing any sort of testing, you know, or like giving them any of your hobbies or your habits. Or I completely agree with you, because, you know, if your PDF says to me, hey, Cassie, cut out all sugar sweetened beverages and you'll lose weight, I'm going to say to you, I don't drink anything sugar sweetened, because I don't. So then that's not going to work. Right. But to the person who's drinking Starbucks and soda, and like, that may be beneficial. So.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I love
that. So that's a hard question, but we tried.
We tried to help you out.
And, We tried. So the other question somebody asked, which I think you'll love this, is there a genetic reason or a genetic explanation that some people cannot lose weight while others can? So what is your, have at that?
Yes, of course there is. People come to me with a slew of different metabolic conditions, PCOS, insulin resistance, sky high cortisol, and fatty liver. These are all reasons that are side effects of being overweight. But why do people have this? Why are some people more prone to this than others? And our genetics tells the story. The genetics really gives us the answer. And how do we fix that, right? Because sometimes I never just hand off a genetic test result to my clients, because it could be really overwhelming to just get this and be like, okay, now what? I always want to be able to be like, okay, these are our next steps. And that is really empowering to know that, okay, so at this cellular level, and that's how it always comes down to, we're all humans, we're all made of cells. So when people say, is genetic testing going to work for me? Of course it is. If it's in the right hands of the right provider, it will work for you because you have cells and we're fixing your cells. So at the cellular level, we can see things like oxidative stress, right? Which is, you know, some toxin burden. So what are toxins? Toxins can be from the way that we eat that causes damage, the toxins in our environment. Alcohol is a toxin. We're surrounded by toxins. All of that causes damage at the cellular level. And we can see that. We can see people that are more prone to oxidative stress. We can also see people that are more prone to be affected by things like the effects of fatty cells. So what do we do about that? How do we lower inflammation in that person? So it really gives us this targeted approach to see basically your root cause. Like, why is it harder for me to lose weight than other people? Your genes. Yeah, your genes will tell us the story. So I love being able to target genes. I love being able to tell people specifically what supplements. I love to get supplementation from food. But if someone is in a position where they're really deprived of certain supplementation, then we provide that as well, which I know you do too, right, Dr. Cassie?
Yeah. So when your gut is really inflamed for whatever reason, then it's hard to get your supplementation from food sometimes, or when you just have no idea what to eat. And so I agree with that. Like, ideally at some point I would love to get off the 30 supplements that I take, but I know that, you know, I live a fast paced life. And I also don't eat as much food as I guess I could. I don't eat in the timed amounts that I would like to. And so sometimes I eat a lot of food at certain times of the day. And so long story short, yes. I mean, I would love to get all my supplementation from food. It's not always possible. And so I think doing testing like this is very important. I do testing on myself every, at least 6 months, sometimes every 3 months. I just did a huge $2,000 workup on myself a couple of weeks ago. And I was kind of floored at some of the things that, you know, I need to work on. And so I will, but yeah, I mean, I think getting that information is very helpful, right? So then you know what you need to supplement and what you need to give your cells so that they can function. And to your point, like, there's so many toxins we breathe, like we breathe so many toxins, and then we put stuff all over our skin because it smells good or because we want our skin to feel well, or, and half the time you don't even know what's in that crap. And then you're cleaning your house with stuff that has, you know, and then the stuff that we eat in this country, I mean, we could talk about that for 3 hours, but nobody's really regulating that or caring anymore what we eat. Right. You know, a lot of the gluten in this country has glyphosate in it, and that can cause issues with, you know, just so many things. And so it's just frustrating. So yeah, like knowing this information, knowing your genes, it's helpful. And to your point, you know, some people might not be able to tolerate carbs or digest carbs as well. I actually have genes where I process carbs very well. And so I, you know, some people may hate me, but I eat a lot of carbs, a ton of carbs. So, but they're good carbs, right? They're fruits and they're vegetables and they're sweet potatoes. And, but then you may not have that gene, you know, you may have the gene that says, no, you do better with fat as opposed to carbs. So there are people that are predisposed to insulin, you know, resistance or diabetes or hormone issues or, but just because, you know, I love Dr. Mark Hyman. He says, you know, genes load the gun, but your actions or habits pull the trigger. Just because you have bad genes doesn't mean that you're going to be overweight, right? Like that's not fair just because you can't necessarily blame that. So I hate that too. Sometimes I feel like when we give people that diagnosis or we give them that like, oh, your genes are predisposing you to this. I don't want people to use that as an excuse, right? Like, yes, exactly. You have those genes, you know that, but use that to better yourself, right?
So. Exactly. I think that what I find is that people are really so empowered by knowing what genes are doing. Because like I said, there's so much misinformation out there. It's so hard to know where to start. And it just kind of gives you like a launching pad to say, okay, my mitochondrial, I'm prone to having mitochondrial dysfunction. And some people might've heard mitochondria as kind of a buzzword that's been going around, but mitochondria is really crucial for energy production. So if you have dysfunction in your mitochondria, you're not going to produce energy as well as someone else. You're not going to burn calories as well as somebody else. So when you were saying, why do other people lose weight easier than other people? You know, things like that, like mitochondrial dysfunction, where you're having, you know, this increased insulin resistance. Endoplasmic reticulum stress is another thing where your endoplasmic reticulum in your cells is involved in protein and lipid synthesis. So if that's destroyed, then you're also not going to be producing proteins and have cellular signaling as you should. So all of those factors that we can see like at the genetic level can really give us some answers as to why you're not losing weight as you should. When we heal the cell with certain supplements, especially big time clearing up toxins that are building up in the cells, we're talking about toxins, we really start to see people lose weight in a more effortless manner.
Yeah, well, I would completely agree. So, okay, that's great. So yes, your genes matter. You need to know what they are. You have to find a provider that knows how to test them, knows what they're looking for, and then can actually interpret them for you. Because yeah, if somebody just hands you a packet, like I pretty much know what I'm doing, but I still got my own packet the other day and I was like, okay, well, you know, like it still can be overwhelming, you know, you're like, dang. Okay. So I think I like your plan of like having somebody who can interpret it and then can help you, you know, make a plan. Right. So
yes.
Yeah, cause it can be overwhelming. And I am very diligent about what I put on myself. You know, I'm that my husband hates me. I came home one day and was like, we're throwing everything in the house away, all the cleaning stuff, all the lotion, all the toothpaste. Like, you know, we use no fluoride toothpaste. We use all that, you know, he calls it all the hippie cleaning stuff with like vinegar and water. And, you know, I don't put anything on my skin that has all the, you know, the bad stuff. Like I use just anyways. So I'm very good about what I put on my skin and on my hair. And, you know, I made my whole post a few weeks ago about how I took my eyelashes off because I didn't even want glue on my face anymore. And so I'm pretty good about all that, but I still have a lot of toxins, which is crazy because I eat well and I exercise and I sauna. And so, yeah, you need to know the information, right? The more information you have, the better you can take care of yourself. So,
exactly.
Okay. Let's see. What else do we have? Somebody wanted to know, do you have any, well, so somebody said, how do you, like, if you have PCOS or you have insulin resistance or you have hormone issues or you have cortisol issues, then how do you go about losing weight? And so I think that's kind of a loaded question too, because it's going to depend on the disease state. But I think, you know, and you can answer it, but getting more information, right? The most information that you have about yourself and your genes is probably the most beneficial. Would you agree?
Exactly. So when we look at disease processes like PCOS, insulin resistance, again, it's going to come down to that cellular level, are looking at the process of glycation. So this is where you have high sugar in the blood, and then these sugar molecules are bonding inappropriately to proteins and lipids and impairing the cellular function. And so again, this damage is seen in high insulin resistance. And so what do you do? How do we fix that at the cellular level? And so the supplementation that we use is CoQ10, which is coenzyme Q10, and vitamin C and E. ALA. We also like to look at chromium. I know some people have heard of chromium. They don't really know why it works, But chromium really helps control blood sugar level and reduces that glycation. So when you know why you're taking what supplement and what it's doing, then it can help you target some of these specific issues that you're dealing with. And then you, when you get your genetic testing, you can see how sensitive you are to some of the supplementation and if it's even going to help you. So for people that are dealing with a variety of different chronic illnesses like that, genetic testing is key and golden, and even some hormonal testing is helpful as well.
Yeah, I would completely agree for sure. So what is a trick? Do you have any tricks from when you were losing weight that helps you resist emotional eating or emotional triggers that cause you to snack or overeat? I get that question a lot.
I get that question a lot. So the first thing I always ask, which some people, you know, think I'm trying to trick them, but really, what are your triggers? And some people don't even realize what their triggers are. That, you know, I love journaling. I didn't always like journaling, but I realized I had to be mindful. Eating is about being more mindful. So I really had to write about what was triggering me. And I'm reminded of a client I'm working with now, and she's in the UK. And so they still get chickenpox there because they don't have the chickenpox vaccines. And her kiddo got chickenpox. And she told me, she's like, I know. It's going to be a tough week for me because that's her trigger. Her trigger is when her kids are sick. That's like all bets are off. She overeats. It's a really stressful thing. It's stressful for any mom. So just knowing what your triggers are, you're one step ahead of the game. And you could really identify your patterns and your triggers for emotional eating. The next thing I would say is mindful eating. So I travel a lot for work and I was finding myself just eating in the car. I completely cut that out because I couldn't tell you what I ate while I was eating in the car. I couldn't tell you how much I ate. I couldn't tell you what I ate. I couldn't tell you how it tasted, the texture, the smell of the food. I just was eating. And you should really be able to enjoy what you're eating and pace yourself, not pace yourself, but allow the hormones of satiety to actually work and tell you that, okay, I'm full, I'm done eating. Allow your brain to signal to your body, we're good, we're full. Another thing that really helps is just having healthy alternatives ready. So I mentioned I don't eat in my car, but I do have protein bars in my car. I do have nuts in my car. If at any point it's just been one of those days and I've hadn't had time to eat, those are in my car ready to go because I know my triggers. My triggers are when I'm in traffic and I'm stressed. So I make sure I have those alternatives ready. Stress management, that's huge. Exercise is like the most underrated antidepressant, right? Everyone always says exercise, getting out, get out when you're stressed, when your triggers hit, yoga, meditation, 10 minutes of walking. And speaking of 10 minutes of walking, 10 minutes of walking is a really good delay tactic. So when you feel the urge and you want to eat that cupcake, you can eat it. I'm not saying don't eat it, but just give me 10 minutes. Just give me 10 minutes where you do a walk or you color in a book and then decide if you still want to eat it. And another delay tactic, which is a really great one, is hydration. So a lot of us will mistake thirst for hunger or emotional cravings. So make sure you're hydrated. A lot of us, oh my goodness, I would say like half of us are dehydrated. And thirst really can make you crave sugar. And that's because when you're really thirsty, you're dehydrated, your sodium, your glucose is off balance. And so your body's just trying to get your electrolytes back into balance sometimes. So you'll crave that glucose to get you back in balance, or you'll crave that salty chip to get your sodium back in balance. So you really want to make sure you're hydrated once you're paying attention to your to these cravings. And then out of sight, out of mind, right? It seems so basic, but if it's not there, you're not going to eat it. So make sure that you're staying hydrated. Hydration is important for energy boost. You're not going to get mistaken signals of hunger and thirst. You're going to make sure that your electrolytes are balanced and you're just going to feel better because you have more energy. Your mood is feeling better. So those are the things I recommend for sure. And another thing I would say, I could talk about emotional eating all day, is cravings. What are you craving and why? A lot of people just think that, well, I'm craving this cupcake. I got to give into my cravings because my body needs it. But what a lot of people don't realize is that you are craving specific things, maybe because of specific nutrient deficiencies. I don't know if you've noticed that with some of your patients or in some of your research. So for me, when I'm craving chocolate, and for most people, it's a magnesium deficiency, right? Get your magnesium citrate on board. That's probably what you're really craving. If you're craving, bread or toast, it could be a nitrogen deficiency. If you're craving salty foods, it could be a chloride deficiency. So it might not be, this emotional eating aspect. You really just might be nutrient deficient, why you feel like you can't stop craving certain foods. So that's important to look at as well.
Wonder if you always crave peanut butter.
That's a good one. Honestly, protein, like peanut butter is my go-to as well. Isn't it so good?
Oh, God. Yeah. No, but to your point, it's emotional. I know it is. So it's my stress reliever. So it used to be whenever I got done with a really stressful day at work, or even if it wasn't that stressful, it's just like, go, 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 go. I would come home and I would open a bottle of wine and I would drink a glass of wine, and that's what I would do. Like that was my thing. And then I might have a glass of wine with dinner, but I don't drink like that anymore. Like I stopped that during COVID because I was like, that's just not what I want to do. So I think I replaced that with peanut butter. So now I'm like, oh, I want peanut butter, like how it tastes, but I wonder if there's something that I'm deficient in that makes me crave peanut butter, because girl, I'm telling you, it's just like overwhelming at 5 o'clock on my way home. I'm like, I want peanut butter. Like,
I love that. I can relate to that.
It's interesting.
I wonder if it's the saltiness. Yeah. I wonder if it's the chloride deficiency.
Well, and see, and to your thing, to the hydration point, like I drink a ton of water and I drink electrolytes in my water. So I do love that. I think that a lot of people are dehydrated, and I drink a lot of salt in my water. I eat a lot of salt. But I do eat a lot of fat. Like sometimes I've thought maybe I'm craving fat, but I eat a ton of fat, lots of avocados, lots of nuts. I don't know.
You're hitting those micronutrients, girl. Yeah, send me your report.
I'll send you my report and you can say this is, but I don't know. Some of it may just be emotional, because last week I was on vacation and I did fine. Like I didn't need my peanut butter. I like how it tastes. I don't know, but I have decided after my podcast episode last week with Goody Beats, he talked me into, I'm going to buy the little things of peanut butter, like the travel ones, And so that's how you can keep yourself from eating the whole jar of peanut butter. You just get one.
For me, it's chocolate almonds, right? Like I cannot, just does me in.
I'll eat chocolate. I don't know that I need chocolate almonds, but yeah, but that's a good point. Like I've never really thought about like, what are my triggers? I think it's just a lot of times during the day. I mean, you'll appreciate this. This morning I went to work at 8:30, and I did actually eat breakfast before I went, which is good for me, 'cause sometimes I don't, I just worked all the way through lunch, all the way through lunch. And so I didn't eat anything until the end of the day. And that's not good either. And so to talk about intermittent fasting, I will tell you that when I was on the intermittent fasting train of life, because everyone's intermittent fasting, I would get so hungry. Like, I mean, want to bite your head off, eat everything in the world hungry. And talk about an emotional like food trigger, right? Like I would come home and be like laying all the food out and I'm eating 4,000 calories. So I know for me, I have to try to eat things like throughout the day or it's not good, So that's why I started eating something before I go to work, like not negotiable. Then I try to eat something at lunch. But so yeah, I think that's a good point. Like just knowing what are your triggers. Mine is, I guess, obviously stress. Maybe it's traffic in Edmond. Oh my God, just drive me crazy. Maybe that's what makes me crave the peanut butter. I don't know. I'm going to be more mindful about it the next time I'm really craving it and think about like, why am I craving this peanut butter? And then I do take my dog for a walk a lot of times. So maybe I'm going to be more mindful about when I get home, I'm going to get my water with electrolytes. I'm going to take my dog for a walk. And in 10 minutes, if I still want the peanut butter, then I guess have at it, right?
You're combining all the hacks. I love that. And sometimes, yeah, I just go for it, especially if it's around my period and I want it, I go for it. But I do run through the list first, and 9 times out of 10, I really don't need it or want it at the end of it. But I love that you brought up intermittent fasting, because I work primarily with women over 30. And intermittent fasting, I find, doesn't work great for the women that I work with. I know it works well for a lot of other women, but I think if you've tried intermittent fasting, you've lost 10 pounds, maybe 15, and you're just not budging, I promise you, I promise you, I promise you, I promise you, it's not your fault. It is not your fault. This is so common. And I found in research that it's really about hormonal sensitivity. So women, especially once we get over the age of 30, are so sensitive to changes in our energy balance. So when you start fasting, and because I bring this up because I was talking about my period, you're affecting your reproductive hormones like estrogen and progesterone. And so that's crucial, not just for your reproductive health, but for your metabolic and your bone health. So when you're disrupting these hormones, you can really lead to issues like menstrual irregularities, fertility problems, and worsening menopausal symptoms. Another thing that disrupts hormones is any kind of liver dysfunction, like fatty liver disease or liver congestion, but that's a whole other topic about hormones. Fasting, again, can also impact your cortisol level, right? So you were talking about stress and dealing with stress. And I mean, what do you see when people are super stressed and elevated cortisol and insulin resistance and increased abdominal fat and metabolic disturbance? Sometimes, you know, it could be the fasting. So I don't know if you've seen that kind of here and there or any effects on thyroid function. Sometimes fasting can affect your thyroid function, which is crucial for metabolism. What have you seen with the patients coming to your clinic?
Yeah, for sure. So I love, there's a book called Fast Like a Girl. Have you read that book?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I haven't read that one yet, but I heard it's amazing.
It's good. And so it talks about how when you fast, you know, it affects different, estrogen and insulin play a good balancing role in cortisol and progesterone. And so there are certain times of your cycle that you can fast and certain times that you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But I see that a lot as well. Like it definitely can mess with your hormones. It can mess with your thyroid. If you have, you know, hundreds of pounds to lose, then yes, you can fast. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you've got a lot of muscle, like where I'm at right now, if I don't eat for 12 to 14 hours, it's a struggle. And then I feel like I need to eat. And I've watched a lot of my labs too. And it does it to your point about hormones, like I could put myself into a real hot flash, like pretty quickly by just doing some intermittent fasting. I mean, you know, if you intermittent fast at the wrong time of your cycle, so right before your period, when your progesterone's really high and your estrogen's lower, and you try to intermittent fast and spike your insulin level, oh, you talk about some hot flashes, you know? And then also people will say, like, a lot of women will say, you know, oh, I get these terrible hot flashes in the middle of the night. Well, my first question to them is, are you drinking alcohol? Because alcohol can affect a lot of that as well, right? So alcohol affects your hormones in the middle of the night can cause hot flashes, but for sure fasting as well. And so I agree with you. I mean, you want to make sure that your body realizes you're going to get the proper nutrients at, you know, times throughout the day. Now, there's going to be people that get on here and chastise us and say, well, your ancestors didn't eat for 5 days in a row. Of course they did. But they also didn't have all these terrible toxins in the world and in their body and in the food that they were eating either. So yeah. So that's where I'm at.
They were also eating real food.
I think that fasting can affect your hormones. And I don't think it works very well unless you have hundreds of pounds to lose. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, we're just at a disadvantage because even eating organic or eating whatever you're purchasing, the soil that our food is grown in just years ago. So we're always kind of at this disadvantage of having these nutrient deficiencies, which is why supplementation is sometimes required.
Yeah, I completely agree. So then one of the other questions somebody asked is, what do you do? How do you manage the plateau phase of weight loss? Like, you know, you brought this up. So the first answer is you don't lose your mind and completely derail yourself and negate all the good things that you've done. So don't do that. But what do you do when you get to this plateau phase and you're on this weight loss journey? How can you manage?
So many plateaus along the way. And the first thing is knowing that it's inevitable. Your body is going to, at some point, you know, it's not always going to be burning fat at this nice downward slope. You're going to have moments where your body composition is literally changing. And there are some points where you're gaining muscle, you're losing more fat than you're losing water. So I love the good old fashioned tape measure. That saved me because, yes, it would seem like a plateau, but then I'd check my waist and it's an inch down, you know? So that at a point in my journey was more important to me than what the scale was saying, because I was losing visceral fat, you know, fat around my organs, and that is healthier, right? It's more important than what the scale is saying. And if it truly is a real plateau where you're not having any progress, always goes back to, what are you doing? What has changed? Have you started incorporating more foods that don't align with your journey than others? And always, that's what's so nice about having a coach and having a community, to be able to rely back on once you hit a plateau, because it can really center you. It could really let you know the next steps. It can really let you kick into gear what you need to, and it makes it so effortless. Really don't see much of a plateau. You kind of just keep going, which is great.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The tape measure is a beautiful thing. And I call scales cry boxes. I think that they are only put on this earth to make women cry. I'm not really sure what the point of the damn things are. Because it doesn't tell me anything about you other than this monetary number, right? And so I tell people this when I do lectures. Like when I walk into a lecture hall and, you know, I wear my suit and all the things and I'm, you know, looking lean and trim. And, you know, I tell them, I say, when I walked up here on this stage, did any of you look at me and think, I bet she weighs 130 pounds? How many of you thought that? Like, nobody thinks that. We don't walk around and say, I bet she weighs 200 pounds. I bet she weighs 175. I mean, nobody cares. But we look at people and we think, wow, they look healthy, or wow, they look lean, or wow, they, you know, your body is your resume. Like, wow, they take really good care of themselves, you know? And so I don't know why we as a society, as a woman, as a person, go back to giving two shits what this number on a thing that you stand on says. You know, like, it drives me insane. I want to know, like, what is your visceral fat? What is your waist circumference? Your waist circumference based on your height. That's a huge, I mean, those things matter. Your percent body fat matters. You know, your muscle mass matters. Your weight doesn't matter. And that's why I put that post up about 2 months ago now. You know, I put a post up of me standing there weighing 120 pounds with not a lot of muscle, but I weighed 120 pounds. And then 2 years later, I weigh 130 and I have way more muscle and I look totally different. And I'll take the 130 all day long, because it's just, muscle, it's different. And so that's the other thing that drives me crazy about people when they come in and they say, I want to weigh 150 pounds. No, what you want, girl, is you want some muscle. You want to fit in your pants. You want to feel good. You know what I mean? Like, that's, and so I honestly never weigh, I never weigh myself anymore. Like, sometimes I will because people ask me, but I don't care because I know it might put me in a bad headspace, to be honest with you. And you can ask my husband. Like, he used to say, I would weigh on, I don't remember, Wednesdays, whenever I was working with a trainer, and he would be like, oh God, when I would come home from the gym, is it going to be a good day or a bad day? It was all based on, like, what was my,
you know, that's so, fly box.
It's so stupid. Like, it's just, it's so dumb, but it would, like, it would upset me. Like, oh my God, I gained 3 pounds. Oh my God. And at the end of the day, none of it really matters. You know, it's like, how do you feel? How do you look? And so anyways, I hate scales. I think that they're ridiculous. I would rather you tell me your waist circumference and, you know, let me see how much muscle mass you have. So it's, if you get to the plateau phase, I would just say, relook at, like you said, look at, what are you eating? Look at what has changed, and, you know, how can you keep working towards getting better?
Yeah. No, stopping is not an option. I always tell to my clients, I'm like, one thing I know is I'm going to get you to your goal. We're not stopping, and we just go all the way. And I love that you bring up muscle. Muscle is an investment. It's like the best investment you can make, because I like to say it pays dividends. It helps burn calories while you're at rest. It helps you look lean and mean. And when we see these older women that look, I mean, sexy, It's muscle. It's a muscle that's giving them this lean definition that when people say they want to look toned, they want more muscle. And so, you know, yeah, you could do cardio, which is important, but muscle is really that nice investment that you want that's going to give you bang for your buck. So I love muscle.
Yeah. Muscle plays compounded interest. Compounds your interest for sure.
And
it's so true. It's the one thing that you can't buy either, right? So a couple of things that I love, it's like your muscle mass and your body is something that you can't buy. You got to put in the work, you got to put in the time. And I'm that weird person so I was working out this weekend at the gym in Las Vegas because we were there. And so I was in there at like 6 o'clock in the morning because I'm that person that wakes up. I'm like, I'm going to go to the gym. And I'm just minding my own business over there, working out, lifting super heavy. And I turn around and I saw this chick. And I mean, when I tell you, I was just like, just beautiful muscle, like just gorgeous girl. But I mean, she was a thicker girl, but she had so much muscle. And I just thought to myself, I was like, she's worked on that for, it probably took her 10 years to look like that, you know, and she's just over there working out, doing her own thing too. And like, to me, that is just so cool because I know how long I've worked to get muscle and I didn't have anywhere close to the muscle she has. And so it's just, I mean, it's the one thing that you can do for yourself that nobody can take away and you have to put in a lot of hard work. It pays compounded dividends and it does so much for your health. And, you know, bodybuilders will tell you this, you'll tell you this, like, if you're going to try to change your body composition and make muscle, it takes years and years and years of repetitive things over and over and over. It never gets easier. It never gets more fun. But it's something that you should do for yourself. And that's why I do it. Like I actually enjoy it now. And every now and then, you know, I'm working out and I'll get a good pump going and I'll see muscles and I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. But
no greater feelings. Like the guns, baby. No.
Yeah. For sure. And there's never, you know, that's the other thing too with muscle is like you can start at any point in your life. Doesn't matter how old you are. You can start to develop muscle. And technically it's free. Like you can do it at home. Pick up something heavy. Do some push-ups. Do body weight squats. Like it's something that nobody can take away from you and something you have to do for yourself. So it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. So then another question that I got was, how does inflammation and testosterone levels affect your weight loss as a woman? Which I think we've kind of talked about, but you have anything extra to add to that?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about oxidative stress, but in terms of inflammation, chronic inflammation, I could talk about inflammation all day. So it can really damage insulin receptors. So when we're talking about things like PCOS, cortisol imbalance, insulin resistance, the high sugar in your bloodstream can damage the insulin receptors and disrupt hormone production. So when your body's in the state of inflammation and dealing with things, different types of toxins, alcohol, sugar, you can get disrupted hormone production and regulation. So we see inflammation in a lot of these diseases because it affects insulin resistance, as I mentioned, PCOS, and it affects your ovarian function, which then leads to higher cortisol levels and then affects your hormones even more. So it's this cycle where you really can't get out of until you get back to the root cause of what's causing this inflammation. And that's why it's talked about so much, because you really can't heal the cell and the cell is not working the way that it should. And another thing about inflammation, which a lot of people don't realize, I have young people, 30s, 40s, coming to me, referred to me by their doctors to be like, help this patient that has fatty liver disease. So young, 18 years old, you know, teenagers. And they're like, oh, I say, why are you here? Oh, I have fatty liver disease, you know, brushing it off and not realizing that this is major. I freak out because I'm like, fatty liver disease is a major diagnosis. One, it's great that it is reversible at some point. Yes, it's a huge deal. But because of inflammation, all that fat that is in the liver can become inflamed. And that means that it becomes cirrhotic. So it can become fibrotic. So it hardens. And then the liver is not able to work in the way that it should because it's hard from all this inflammation. And then when it becomes cirrhotic, it can get to the point where it's more predisposed to turn into liver cancer. And I've seen people in their 50s need liver transplants because of fatty liver disease. So imagine needing your organ transplanted because of your diet or how you're eating or how you are metabolically. Like, it's really serious. And it's not talked about enough that how we eat is causing these pretty serious diseases younger and younger and younger. And so when we talk about inflammation, we need things like that. So I just think it's really important to understand that it can cause this. Initially, it's reversible. At some point, it's not reversible. And so you really want to get to the root of your inflammation. You really want to get to the root of what is causing your body to be in this state so we can get you to a state of health. And there is a level of urgency because you don't have all day long. But like when I meet with clients or patients, the first thing I ask them is why today? Like, why now and why not later? Because I want to see if they understand the urgency and where that they don't really have the time to wait 3, 4, 6, a year. Like, just because they've been waiting for this long doesn't mean that they should wait another 2, 3 years. You only have one body, right? And so if you've been living under chronic elevated cortisol, chronic inflammation, you need to fix it now. Find someone to help you do it.
Yeah. Because just like muscle pays compounded interest, so does inflammation in a negative way. Ooh. So I tell people that all the time.
Yeah, that's
as
a
much,
good one.
I mean,
yeah.
Inflammation is the root of all disease processes, in my opinion. It's what causes all the issues that we have in this country, every country. I mean, metabolic health in general is all rooted in inflammation. And there's so many things that cause inflammation. And so the more that you have, the more it compounds and the more issues that you have. So I completely agree. Like, there are so many markers and so many genes we can get now, right? Like, I used to think, well, I'm super healthy. I work out, I eat pretty good, whatever. And then I started checking my own blood and I was like, dear God, like, you know, you can be skinny fat and you can be, you know, you can look healthy and not be healthy. And so there's no real reason, I don't think, in 2024 that people don't have this information, right? Like, you should know, what is your insulin level? What is your CRP level? Do you have a TPO antibody? What do your micronutrients look like? You know, what is your waist circumference? Like, you should know all these things. Your LDL, little a, like, what are all these things? What is your uric acid level? And if they're all high, then your check engine lights are all on, then you need to pull over and figure it out, because otherwise you're going to start having issues.
I love that you said check engine light. That's so good, because by the time people have come to me, they've had like 3, 4, 5 check engine lights on, and you can't ignore those because your body's saying, hey, something's not working. You got to get to the root cause, because I might just shut down, and you don't want to shut down in this North American healthcare, the way that it's set up, because it really is not set up to really help you with that check engine light. It's really trying to just keep you going until the next calamity happens. And that's not a way to live life. You don't want to live from hospital admission to hospital admission. That's no way to live.
No. We're very reactive in healthcare. We're not proactive.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing that just drives me insane. And so you're right. By the time you end up in a hospital or you have a heart attack or you end up with diabetes, unless you actively seek a functional medicine or a good provider, unless you are actually your own best advocate, you are going to get a physician or a provider that is reactive, that is going to bandage any leaky valve you have at that moment, push you out the door. Your inflammation is going to continue to compound and pay dividends. You're going to continue to get sicker. And that's just how this healthcare system works. Like, it sucks. It's not right. But that's how it works. Unless you find a functional medicine provider that's going to help you figure out what's the root cause and then help you start to fix it. And that is what's frustrating, is a lot of these people have gone to providers for years and had multiple check engine lights on. You know, that's what I tell my patients. Like, they come in and they see me and they leave with 10 diagnoses. Like, you've got 10 check engine lights on. So you either pull over and we start figuring this out, or bad things are about to happen, you know, and you just have to make your choice. But your body, you know, your body, I stole this from one of my good friends, Dr. D, but he says all the time, like, your body cannot text you, or it cannot call you. It can't send you an email if it's upset, right? Like, your body's not gonna be like, oh, hey, Cassie, stop doing that. It does that via symptoms, right? And so it does it through inflammation. Oh, my joints hurt. Oh, I can't get out of bed. Oh, I'm tired. Oh, I'm, you know, I just feel awful. Like, that is your body telling you that, hey, you are not treating me right. Something's not right. You know, like, we're not meant to feel terrible. We're meant to be functioning individuals. And so if you don't feel well, then you need to figure out why. Like, there's no reason in today's age that you can't. So,
and like, the alternative is just not cute. Like, it's just not, you know, just to put it as the kids would say, it's just not cute. Because we're thinking, like, when people say, my, you know, my knees are starting to hurt, and then like 10 years later, they need a knee replacement. If you could just have worked with someone to change your lifestyle, you wouldn't be needing a knee replacement. Any replacements are not 100%. I'm talking about things like, you know, angioplasties. These are major procedures that people are having when they ignore these check engine lights. Dialysis, where you don't even have working kidneys because you're ignoring your check engine light. And we don't talk about the other side of ignoring these signs. And sometimes people unfortunately find out when it's too late. And I'm going to scream from the highest mountain to try to capture everyone I can and help them not get to that point, because I've seen it happen way too many times. And I know you have as well as a physician, and we want better for everyone.
Yeah. No, for sure. That's why I was chronically depressed and like thought about leaving medicine right before COVID, because I worked at Mercy Hospital for 3 years as an endocrinologist and right out of fellowship. And all I did was give people more drugs, more drugs, more drugs, more drugs, more drugs, more drugs. And their glucose was higher and their blood pressure was higher and they got fatter and they gained more weight. And then they had coronary artery disease. And I was just like, this cannot be what I signed up for the next 30 years. Like, this is so disheartening, you know? And I was just like, I don't even know what to do with these people, because I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, right? I'm giving them all their drugs and they just are getting worse. And so, you know, I think people have to make a decision, and a lot of them get frustrated and say, well, I don't have time, or I don't have the money, or I don't have the resources. To that, I say, you have Google. You live in the United States, like, you can figure it out, and you're either going to figure it out now and you're going
to help you.
Oh, yeah. And you're going to pay for it now, and you're going to utilize your resources now, or you're going to pay for it in the future, one or the other. So it's your choice. I mean, you know, is it more expensive to eat healthy? Maybe, but do you know how much it costs to have a coronary angiogram in this country? I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So life's about choices, and you get to pick your own, but I've seen it firsthand. The healthcare system is broken. I don't know how they're going to fix it. You've got to be your own best advocate. We have to stop being reactive, and you have to start being proactive. If you don't, you're going to get stuck in that nasty wheel, and you're never going to get better. I promise. And that's just, I mean, that's life.
That's just the way it is. And honestly, I always tell people, like, if this tooth was chipped, you would pay whatever it took to fix it. You're not walking around with a busted tooth. So how much more so your whole body, your whole well-being, like your future, your longevity? And then people are like, I can't afford it. That is a huge investment into yourself, into your well-being, into people that get to be around you and get the most healthiest version of yourself. I had a patient, and she came to me and she said, I just want better memory. I just want, and my doctor wants me to lose weight, but I'm really scared about my memory because my mom, you know, is really, you know, can't remember me. And I, you know, we looked at her, you know, genetic testing can actually tell you if you're predisposed to having memory loss. And we cut out her sugar, surprisingly enough. And she came back and, you know, we had been working together and came back, and she was like, I can't believe how much my memory has improved. There's been study after study after study that's shown the toxic effect of sugar on brain cells. And still people, you know, ignore that and, you know, eat things that are not great for them. But I can't imagine not having my memory. So there's definitely a cause and effect to some of these things.
Yeah, it's so sad. And you know, and the people who say like, I don't have time to take care of myself. I don't have time. I have my kids and I have my family and I, you know, I'm a physician, I'm an attorney. To that I say to you, sir or ma'am, you're only best equipped to help other people if you're in your best shape. Right. And the other thing is like, people are going to become the people that they're around. So if you really want to be a good parent, you want to be a good provider, you want to be a good friend, you want to be a good coach, you want to be a good husband or wife, the best thing you can do for those people that you're around is to be healthy and to feel your best, right? Because you can't I can't be good to my husband. I can't be good to my patients. I can't be good to anyone if I'm eating crap and feeling like crap, right? And so that's the other thing that gets me a little bit fired up when you have these people who are coaching people online or doctors that are saying this or that online or teaching people whatever, but yet they themselves are not healthy or not in their best, you know, best mentality or best health. I mean, that's just, I don't know. It's a cop out in my opinion. Like, and especially if you have a kid, I'm not lucky enough to be a parent yet, but I can't imagine looking at my kid and saying like, I'm too tired to do that. Or I can't go walk with you because I don't feel good. Or I can't, like, that would be devastating to me. Right. As a parent, like that's just because you're also showing them that, hey, that's okay to lay on the couch and to not exercise. And so, I mean, in my mind, that right there is the biggest reason to do anything, right? To show your kids, like, this is how you're supposed to be. This is what you're supposed to be doing. So find a reason. If it's not yourself, yeah. Right? If you don't feel worthy enough yourself, then find another reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Same. And that was a huge thing for me where the moment I realized I couldn't play with my kids the way that I wanted to, something has to change. And a lot of my patients, it's the same way. They're maybe expecting, or they have young kids and they're like, enough is enough. I want to be better for my family.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I have some questions that I always end with. So those were most of the questions that our listeners or my listeners, my followers wanted. So thank you for answering those. But one of the questions that I like to end with, so if there was one food that you would tell people they could consume to improve their health, what would that one food be?
Oh, that's such a good question. One food to improve their health.
And maybe it's even something that's easy so that like anyone can kind of can do it. What would be like a go-to?
Low sugar, high protein Greek yogurt. And the reason why I say that is because it is so easy. It's so accessible. It's in every grocery store. You got to be careful though, because some of these yogurts are wicked in sugar, like so high, but the right yogurt is so easy. You could throw berries in it. So versatile. It's filling. It has, you know, the great bacteria for your gut microbiome. Yeah, I think that's the one food that, and it's kind of hard to overeat Greek yogurt, you know, it's delicious. So yeah, I would say that'd be the one food for sure.
Okay. I love that. What about what is one behavior or action that you can do to improve your health? Like if there was a tip you could give someone, a behavior or action, what would you tell them to do to help improve their health?
I would say micro shifts. Lean into the micro shifts, lean into consistency, pull away from that perfection. So I know it sounds like three, but it really is just one, right? Just consistency. So how can you be consistent is by stop focusing on perfection, realizing that these little changes are making a big change. And yeah, that's it. It's consistency is the name of the game. And if you're not able to be consistent, it's because you have a plan that's not personalized enough for you. That's not working for you specifically. So it's not your fault if you can't be consistent. You just don't have the right plan. Consistency is the name of the game.
I love that. That's so true. Because 6 months, 6 months is going to come no matter what, right? So you either get to decide, am I better in 6 months or am I exactly where I was? And I completely agree with that. You just have to be consistent.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. And I tell myself that all the time. Like, it's just being consistent. I mean, you get to make that choice. And so and the more you do it, the easier it is. But I do like, I'm going to steal your perfection because there are days like this morning was a perfect example, right? I got home late last night and I slept in a little bit this morning. I didn't get up until 6:15. I'm normally up at like 4:15. And when my alarm went off, I thought, okay, I can go do something for 30 minutes, right? I got 30 minutes. I can hop in the sauna. I can still be at work. And then the first thing that popped in my head was, what are you going to do in 30 minutes? Like, there's nothing you're like, you know, I started this negative talk for a second. And then I was like, no, wait a minute. I'm going to do something for 30 minutes. You know what I mean? I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to go to the gym and do something. And so I did, and I'm glad that I did. I do my hour and a half that I normally do? No, but I went to the gym and I did something because I wanted to just be consistent. So
I love that you share that story because a lot of people think, especially like us early risers, first of all, we sleep early, so we're not maniacs, but I think some people think, well, they're fit and she lost 100 pounds because she has this superhuman ability to wake up early or do things that I can't do. And really quick story, I remember when I was younger and my cousin has 4 kids and I would look at her and I'd be like, well, she's only a great mom because there's something about her. Like she's just special. But when I became a mom, I realized she's incredible. I love my cousin, but it's, you do it. You just get it done and you become that great, incredible mom, right? I didn't know what I was doing. Like and none of us do, like none of us moms do. We're just, you know, and it's the same thing about being in shape and getting in shape. There's nothing amazing about me or any of the women that I work with. I mean, they are incredible to me that have lost 150 pounds, 50 pounds, 100 pounds. They just get it done consistently, just like how you said, right? You know, you don't do an hour and a half every single day. You're just like everybody else that's listening. And so they can do it too.
Yeah. I knew I needed to show up for myself this morning. Right. Cause it's Monday morning. Yeah. I've just been on vacation. I got all these things going. Yeah. I had every excuse you could think of to stay in bed this morning. I thought my alarm went off at 6:15 and I thought I could sleep till 7. And then, like I said, but I also thought, you know I feel better when I work out. I know I've got all these things to do cause I've been on vacation. I know that I consistently show up for myself. I know, you know, and I'm just like, no, I'm getting up because I'm going to consistently show up for myself. I'm going to do something. And so did I do a ton of stuff this morning? No, actually what I did, to be honest with you, is I walked on the treadmill on an incline for about 20 minutes. And then I looked outside and was like, oh my gosh, it's gorgeous. And I got off my treadmill and I went outside for 10 minutes and I walked. So I didn't even do anything that great this morning, but I felt great because I got up and I was, you know, I showed up for myself and I took a little walk and I actually listened to my podcast that released this morning. Just took a little walk. So
yeah, it was fine. So good. I listened to it. Amazing. This show is game changer. It's changing lives. So, so, so proud and so honored to be on the show today.
I don't know about that yet, but I'm hoping that it's at least giving people some easy tips. You know, that's kind of why I called it Back to the Basics. Like, let's just go back to how can we get better? You know, what are some little tips we can do? Because I was like that, you know, I'm sure you felt like that, very overwhelmed. And it's just like, there's so much information out there. And so let's just talk about some simple things we can do to start being better, right? Being healthy and being better. Cause that's really all that matters. So, okay. What is one thing you wish you would have known about your health 10 years ago? Like if you could go back and talk to yourself, Dr. Phyllis, 10 years ago, if you could talk to yourself, what would you have taught yourself about your health?
That certain things are irreversible. I think that I always thought that I could bounce back from certain things, that I could just, oh, that's future Phyllis's problem. And it got to a point where I am future Phyllis. And it sucks. So there's some things, yes, I lost 100 pounds, but there's some things that will never go away, you know, that, you know, the stretch marks and, you know, my skin is tight, but it could be a bit tighter. So certain things like that, I'm grateful for my health and it's not all about appearances, but And I'm lucky. At some point, I did develop hypertension. I'm off medications. But for some people, it's chronic. You know, that damage to your vessels that happens when you're obese or overweight. It's not a guarantee that you can get off your medications if you wait too long. So I wish I knew back then that I was playing a very dangerous game and took my health more seriously.
Okay. I love all that. Well, thank you so much. It's been great to talk with you. I love getting to know you. I'm excited for everything that you're doing. You guys will definitely have to go check her out on social media and her website. She's got a lot of super exciting things coming, and her and I may be doing some more collaboration in the future. We've talked about a few things, so I'm super excited about that. So thank you so much for coming and being a guest.
The information presented, including any materials discussed, referenced, or linked within this podcast, are for general educational purposes only, not the practice of medicine. No doctor-patient relationship is formed from you listening to this podcast or utilizing any of the information provided. I am a doctor, but I am not talking to you as your doctor. The information provided is not intended to diagnose or treat health problems, or take the place of the professional medical care provided by your doctor. If you are experiencing any health problems, including problems you believe have been touched upon in any respect within this podcast, you should consult your doctor about the problems without delay. You may ask your doctor whether he or she believes the information I have provided would be helpful to you, but you should still consult your doctor immediately and follow his or her medical advice as your treating physician. I'm just here to provide you basic knowledge about the issues we discuss so you are more aware of them and can better discuss them with your doctor. That's why we call it Back to the Basics. Join me on the next episode as we continue our journey.